And what it was Dave Onyemata kind of taps, kind of bumps the guy off that was blocking Sheldon Rankins, and he takes a big time hit on Case Keenum. Fence coverage again.
Third and 10 from the Viking 39. Precious seconds left on the clock. The Vikings need a completion and an apparent field goal attempt. Here's Keenum, dropping, looking, throwing near sideline, and it's caught by Stephon Diggs. He's going to take it inside the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown on the final play of this game. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? He could have came up and just tackled him. He stuck, put his head down, and he didn't step out of bounds, Jim. They're going to review it, but he didn't step out of bounds.
61-yard touchdown strike to Stephon Diggs. Almost looked like the Saints defenders came up with an intent to intercept the pass. Instead, they couldn't get their hands on it. It fell right into the nose of Stephon Diggs.
The previous play.
He didn't step out of bounds. It looked like it, but he never stepped out. Marcus Williams just, he ducked his head.
Okay, and on that note, welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. Alex is here today for a change, but my co-host, Akiva Wienerker, has decided to no-show. So I think that's okay. I think we'll have enough to talk about. As you may have been able to tell from the introduction, we are here to talk about the New Orleans Saints today. The Minneapolis Miracle, the greatest moment in my life. I've only really ever seen it from my perspective. I've watched endless YouTube, different versions of it, but it's always been from sort of the victorious side. But apparently there was a team that was seconds away from they thought going to the NFC Championship who lost. So here to talk about that team is Paul Elliott. So Paul, welcome back to the podcast. Walk me through how the last few moments of that game was from your perspective.
Well, first off, Chester, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I was kind of disappointed you didn't call me after the game to ask me on. I still haven't listened to that episode, by the way, and I probably won't. But I was happy for you. Don't get me wrong.
Me crying and bubbling.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Well, I was happy for you. But that game was weird for me because I had this persistent sense of doom the entire second half because I kept thinking. I just felt like we were going to blow it somehow, even when we were coming back. You know, Breeze has that great drive, and we go up, and I'm like, and then you guys get the ball back, and I'm thinking, okay, something's going to happen, something funky's going to happen, and we get down.
Are you talking about the last 25 seconds or the previous drive where they kicked the 53-yard field goal?
Well, actually, okay, so first off, I forgot about that. Actually, yeah, I thought for sure we were going to miss the field goal.
The last one, your last points.
Correct. I thought, okay, we're going to miss this field goal.
Okay, because when Breeze converted, I forget, was it 4th and 10 or 3rd and 10? It was 4th and 10, I think, right? All the way on the left sideline.
Yeah, I've unfortunately lost a lot of the memory of that game, but yeah.
When Breeze converted that, at that point, the game was over, I thought. The miracle to me was on the previous possession. When, I have hated this Vikings kicker for, obviously he's better than Blair Walsh, but the fact that he had a 53-yarder was miraculous to me. And, of course, he left too much time on the clock for Breeze, who ironically left too much time on the clock for Case Keenum. So, just the last 2 minutes were bonkers.
Yeah, and like I said, I just kept thinking, okay, we're either going to miss this field goal, and I apologize, I don't remember the full details, like I said, but so getting to that last play, we're down, it's 8 seconds. I'm thinking, we might actually pull this off. And 2 seconds later, of course, Stephon Diggs is running down the sideline and I'm getting text messages from people at work seeing if I'm okay. And,
do you live in New Orleans?
I do not. I live in Katy, Texas, which is right outside of Houston.
So there's some Saints fans around you, but it's not like everybody you know is a Saints fan.
I'm definitely around where I live. It's probably more Texans fans or Cowboys fans, to be honest.
Yeah.
But there are some Saints fans. Actually, the other day I was driving around and saw a couple Saints license plates or so.
Well, I had thought that, like, after Katrina, a lot of New Orleans people had sort of gone to Houston. And I
That's
thought,
true.
I wondered if maybe there was any kind of sort of existing
no,
sort of
no, no, there definitely
at all.
I mean, there definitely is. I to be honest, I haven't, like, seeked out. I kind of go to work, keep to myself, come home to my wife and three kids.
Yeah, I'm in an email listserv for, like, a local Minnesota, like, a Minnesota rooting bar in New York for, like, Vikings and Twins games, but I never actually go to it. I just sort of send emails.
I do know there's a bar around here that does do Saints watches, like Saints watch parties on Sundays. I haven't checked it out yet, though. There's a bar called the Ragin' Cajun, apparently, in town, which is apropos.
Listen, you're talking about how you had a feeling, you know, with 8 seconds to go, hey, we're actually going to win this one. Let me remind you of another moment, which I've talked about a lot on this podcast.
Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps. Now he fires over the middle. Intercepted. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. It was intercepted by Tracy Porter. Near side to the 40, and John Sullivan runs him down at the 47-yard line. You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe what I just saw.
Looking at that play, he should have just held on to it, Paul. He should have. He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
So, yeah, I've ranted a lot about Greg Williams and how much I hate the Saints for that game. But, you know, one of the dumbest moments of my life was right before the 12-man on the field penalty.
Yep.
I saw the Gary Anderson game and I saw the 41-0 and all these other times when the Vikings have blown NFC championship games that they were supposed to win. And yet, like a moron, I actually turned to the people who I was watching the game with, including my wife at the time of just a few months, who was horrified to witness what she had married into. And I actually said I said, I can't believe we're actually going to go to the Super Bowl. And I said that when they still had to kick a field goal, which, of course, they never even had an opportunity to kick.
Right.
So, I know the feeling of thinking like, wow, we've actually done it. And for you, you've already won that bullshit Super Bowl. So,
So the next day at work, a lot of people were asking, you know, are you okay? And I said, you know, if 2009 had not happened, I would have been in much worse shape. But, you know, to your point, like the knowledge that knowing that, yeah, we've got a Super Bowl done. I mean, the Astros are my baseball team, so they had just won the World Series. It's kind of like, okay, Saints honestly were playing with house money at that point last year. I mean, we were down, 17-0 in that game. We had no business getting back in that game, honestly. So, in Louisiana, we have a saying called lanyap, which is basically like, you know, little something extra. Like, so everything past getting in the playoffs last year for the Saints was lanyap. It was just kind of like a little extra. So,
all right. So let's transition to the 2018 Saints then. So you're coming into the season. You know, Akiva and I have them ranked number 4 collectively in our power rankings.
Oh boy,
people are very high on this team. It's a team. Yeah, it's a team that looked like they could have won a Super Bowl last year, possibly, and they haven't really. I mean, well, tell me. I mean, are there any massive losses from last season's team in your opinion?
Honestly, no. I was thinking about this today. I was kind of looking at the free agency rundown. I would say the biggest loss we had, so from people who played a lot last year, obviously we lost Kenny Vaccaro, but it's not like he was setting the world on fire at safety.
Yeah, that's addition by subtraction.
Shout out to Johnny DeSilvera. He'll get a lot of it, Kenny Vaccaro this year on the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, he's on the Titans?
Yeah, he just signed with the Titans in training camp. They had an injury, and they brought him in. But anyway, and then we also lost, I think this could potentially be a big deal, we lost a backup guard, Siono Kelemete, who's actually playing in Houston now. He's with the Texans. He's going to start. He was kind of a backup for us, and he really was – when Armstead went out and we had to kind of shuffle the line a little bit, he was a – I mean, he just plugged right in and played, and, you know, we really didn't miss a beat, I think, on the offensive line. But other than those two guys, yeah, we really didn't miss – I mean, we really didn't miss a lot. And also, too, another thing I wanted to bring up is – in free agency, the Saints in the last couple of off seasons have had the tendency to go after the big free agent, right, and make a big, not maybe not the big free agent, but just, you know, they'll sign Jarius Byrd to a contract, or sign the human penalty Brandon Browner to a contract, and like just all and these kind of just moves that don't work out for us, or Adrian Peterson even last year. But like,
you know, it's funny. I was watching a couple weeks ago this video. There's this guy on YouTube, Funky Dunkelman, who's like this Vikings video compiler, and he just so I was watching this video called Adrian Peterson's Greatest Run versus Every NFL Team.
Okay.
And it's in alphabetical order, so it starts with his best run against, you know, I guess the Cardinals and then the Falcons, right, and sort of going off. And all of a sudden we get to the middle, and it shows Adrian Peterson in a Saints uniform with a 3-yard rush, and which was the first play of the game in the Monday Nighter last year in week one. I was like, oh, I guess, yeah, they need his best rush against the Vikings, which was for 3 yards
right,
in the first
right.
play of the game.
Yeah, but yeah. So getting back to the point I was making was it's just
yeah, –
no, you're fine. The – I think this year they were very they kind of were bargain shoppers, I want to say, this year in free agency. Also, too, like, we've been in salary cap hell for the last couple of years, so that didn't help. But, you know, we got DeMario Davis from the Jets. We got we brought Ben Watson back from the Ravens. Like, we kind of switched Ben Watson for Kobe Fleener, which, I mean, that's another bad, terrible signing that we had last year, or a couple years ago, was Kobe Fleener. That didn't pan out. But, you know, I think as far as what we lost, yeah, I mean, other than Vaccaro and Kelamente, I mean, we really didn't lose a lot. We just cut Devontae Harris, who 2 years ago was playing substantial minutes for us, and now, thanks to kind of through the draft and through, you know, developing player undrafted free agents, we're kind of to the point where we could let him go, and he just signed with Tampa Bay, I think, because they had an injury to Hargraves. So we'll see him week one. But yeah, I mean, we're coming in. So this is when I get really nervous about the Saints, because we're coming in. Everybody's kind of on the bandwagon. You know, everybody's telling us how good we are, and I don't know. I'm interested to see how they handle it this year.
Okay, Paul. So. Akiva's not here, but we're going to try and stick to some of his segments the way that he's been doing this. So his first segment is asking for your coach confidence rating from 1 to 10. So the weird thing to me, you know, before I turn to you on Sean Payton, is basically, you know, even ever since he came back from the suspension year because of Bountygate, the Saints were sort of stuck in this like 7-9 hell, partly because, as you talked about with their salary cap issues, and they were 7-9 year after year after year, and it was sort of like the assumption, at least outside New Orleans, was, well, this is what they're going to be for the rest of Breeze's career. They don't have enough around him, and so they're going to, you know, he's too good to fall to, you know, to bottom out unless he gets injured, so, but they'll stick around, you know, just 500 or just a little bit under in perpetuity. And then last year, of course, out of nowhere, they explode to this, you know, they explode to this monster 11-5 season where, you know, they look like a really good team, and there weren't, you know, you know, obviously Alvin Kamara was an addition, and Larry Warford on the offensive line had a real good season. And what was the rookie? Ryan Rams, the guy from Wisconsin.
Ramsick.
He was a rookie.
Yeah, Ryan Ramsick.
So, you know, your offensive line improved a lot. And then obviously Kamara. And then obviously defensively, Marshon Lattimore, at least until the last play of the season, you know, you had a couple guys on defense. But it wasn't
right.
A lot. I don't think people outside New Orleans were coming into the season thinking, oh, yeah, this is a contender again. And so now, as you said, now there's sort of the national hype around this team. McKeever and I have them all the way up at number 4. But last time they went 11-5, they then turned around and went 7-9 3 years in a row right after that. So is your confidence in Sean Payton, like, where is it from 1 to 10? Do you see him as the elite coach who won you a Super Bowl? Or?
So here's my thing with Payton. So, yeah, to your point. So when he came back after 2012, the 2013 season, he hires Rob Ryan as a defensive coordinator. We go, it was 11-5. Yeah, we go 11-5, and the defense is a top 5 defense. And we win.
Oh, it wasn't?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well,
top 10 for sure. Maybe not top 5. But okay. We go to Philadelphia. We win a road playoff game. We go up to Seattle and lose, but it was a competitive game. And then the next season.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm looking at this. Yeah, they were last in 2012.
Oh, we were. Yeah,
next year. Yeah, the next year they had number 4 defense, and then they immediately were last again the next 3 years.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So that's what I was going to say. So Ryan, like, it's this weird thing with defensive coordinators with the Saints. Like, they have a good first year, like Ryan did, and then the next, like, they can't, for whatever reason, build consistency. So we'll see what Dennis Allen does. I think Dennis Allen's vibe is a little more in line with Sean Payton's vibe. So I think they have my perception is they have a better working relationship than Ryan and Payton did. I don't think Payton was a big fan of Ryan's, like, let's just blitz everybody and hope for the best kind of thing.
Yeehaw.
But, and also, too, I mean, you know, remember the last time he gave a defensive coordinator, like, kind of free reign, he got suspended for a year. So it's kind of like, you know, so, and then, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think Dennis Allen is like a fascist the way that Greg Williams is.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, Dennis Allen.
Are you watching Hard Knocks, by the way?
No, I've heard you and Keeve talk about it.
Greg Williams, I mean, God. He seems like he's old, because he was on the Rams show a couple years ago, the Amazon show.
Right.
But, I mean, he is just, every time I see him, he's just worse and worse. I mean, he's a compelling character just because he's such an asshole.
Well, and that's why I think week two this season is going to be interesting. Cleveland comes to New Orleans. And if you recall, when he
there's going to be a bounty on Drew Brees. You better believe that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. But when the Rams came to the New Orleans a couple of years ago and Williams was the D coordinator, we ran up the score, basically. I don't know if you remember that, but the word going around was we were running up the score just to shove it in Williams' face. This was obviously before the Rams' defense was as good as they are now. But anyway. Sorry, getting back to Payton and his where I'm at. I'm hesitant to go all the way to 10. To me, and I think you and Keeve talked about this on maybe one of your first episodes for this season, like Belichick is a 10. To me, Payton is a solid 8. The reason I say that is because I think sometimes he maybe doesn't trust his D coordinator. Again, I understand given reasons we talked about. And also, too, I think last year he was very patient with the running game. He didn't, you know, the Saints would get in these games. Previous seasons, you get in a game, you get down early, and it's like, okay, Breeze, you're going to throw the ball 50 times. Good luck. Last year, I felt like we were a little more patient. You know, Ingram had a 1,000-yard season, was a Pro Bowler. Obviously, Kamara, who I didn't even mention on the show last year. Oops. comes out and, like, you know, has, you know, is like this all-world player. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously there's new challenges this year. Ingram's not playing the first four games. So we'll see. I mean, I think if he trusts, you know, because, again, Payton, to me, the biggest thing, he's from the Bill Parcells tree, right? So he's a control freak. He wants to, you know, if he feels like things aren't going the way they should be going, he wants to, like, you know, immediately abandon the run and all that. I mean, you saw it in the Vikings game in that NFC divisional game. I mean, we got down 17-0. I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a wash. And then he just kind of kept with it, stayed with it. The defense made a couple plays until they didn't make a play at the end. And then, you know. But, yeah, I think – so for my ranking for him, I would definitely go 8, solid 8.
Well, so I guess my question is, would you have had him 8 coming into last season when he was out?
Probably
I thought that,
probably
not. Nationally, I thought people were saying, like, you know, 3 7-9 years in a row.
Right.
He's washed up. It's time
for
him to go.
Yeah, because I remember, I forget who it was.
I think Keeve and I had him on our possible firings list.
I think you guys did, but one of your other guests, I want to say it was the Chargers fan, he said, look, because our schedule was tough opening last year. We started with the Vikings on the Monday night game, had to play the Patriots coming off the Thursday night game. They had a Thursday night game. We were coming off the Monday night game. We start 0-2, and it's like, okay, man, look, if you can't get to 2-2 by the bye, it might be we might not have had Sean Payton this year. But, you know, like I said, turned around, played well against Carolina, got real lucky coming off the bye that Aaron Rodgers got hurt the week before we played the Packers, went to Green Bay, won that game.
Yeah,
you know,
we played a role over there, but yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, but
but, yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is, you know, you talk, this defense was so bad for each of the previous 3 years. And Sam Bradford made them look, like, historically awful in week one. And then, obviously, the next week, the same. But, you know, that's Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Right.
So, I mean, how did they turn it around so quickly? I mean, you know, we talked about, I mentioned Marshawn Lattimore as a rookie was really good, and I think Sheldon Rankins had a pretty good season after like not doing too much as a rookie. But like, what explains how they went from so bad to, you know, above average? So,
so a couple things. I think you touched on a couple right there. But I mean, to me, a really underlying kind of an unsung hero for us was Alex Okafor, who we signed in free agency last year. And until he blew out his Achilles late in the season, he was playing really well opposite Cam Jordan. I mean, Cam Jordan obviously too. Like, Cam Jordan had, you know, 13 and a half, 14 sacks last year, so obviously that helps.
Yeah.
That's one thing we were lacking. You know, we with like going back to my what I was talking about with Rob Ryan, the reason he would blitz a lot is we couldn't generate a pass rush with four guys. And then also too with Rankins, one of the reasons he didn't really do a lot his rookie year, he was hurt his rookie year. He got hurt in camp, he missed the first eight games. So they're expecting a lot from him. They're expecting a lot from Onyemata, David Onyemata, who was a guy out of Canada that we signed. We drafted him out of Canada. I don't even remember where he played college ball, but he came on. You know, they're expecting big things from him. And that's another thing too. It feels like this year coming in, we have a lot of depth on the defensive line and also at corner. As I mentioned, Devontae Harris, we let him go because we felt like, with guys like Lattimore, with guys like Ken Crawley, who stepped up last year. Obviously, you know, I made fun of Vaccaro earlier, but you know what? Vaccaro, I mean, he didn't, like I said, he wasn't setting the world on fire, but he played his role for the most part. You know, Marcus Williams, I know he had that play, but up till then he was playing pretty well for a rookie. I mean,
oh yeah, I think I said it was Lattimore, but it was Williams who had the play.
No, it was Marcus. Right. Did they say that on the?
I'm all confused.
No, it was definitely,
who was the one who whiffed on the Minneapolis Miracle?
That was Marcus Williams. That was definitely Marcus.
Okay,
Williams.
He Lattimore, was Lattimore. Okay, all right.
So we had two rookies. So we drafted Lattimore first round, and then
Lattimore was the first round pick, the corner. Right. Yeah, but Marcus was the safety who took out two guys at once. So.
And that and you know, one of the, I remember right after the game, somebody, one of the Saints writers that I follow, tweeted out like a draft report on Marcus Williams. And one of the things they said is he tries to make the big play instead of going for the sure tackle.
It's like, well, good analysis.
There you go, man. Yeah. So I don't remember who was on. I don't think Lattimore was on Diggs. I'm trying to remember who was on Diggs because Williams was coming in from the back.
I've talked a lot about this at the time. But, like, not enough was said about how stupid the Saints' coverage was on that play. If you look at the play, they had three or four guys doing absolutely nothing defensively. They had one guy covering the tight end in the flat. Like, there's no reason – nobody should have been within covering any receiver or running back who's 10 yards off the line, who's not more than 10 yards down the field.
No,
because
no,
this
I
is
agree.
The last
no.
– they got to complete the ball and get out of bounds within field goal range. So if they throw it to the tight end in the flat, that does absolutely nothing, right? It's not like we have a Tyreek Hill who's going to weave through and get into the end zone.
Yeah,
so
no.
I thought it was really poor defensive, you know, the way they had their guys lined
up. The only way you guys win that game is what happened, basically. Like,
yeah. Well, so. Or he steps out of bounds.
Fair enough.
But anyway. Fair. Well, let's move on past that play. All right, so you're pretty confident in your coach, obviously. We don't need to talk about your quarterback.
The thing about
Drew Brees is, can I just read you, this is, since Drew Brees joined the Saints in 2006, this is, and this isn't DVOA, this is just yards, so traditional offensive ranking, every year of New Orleans since he joined the team. Can I read it to you?
Yep, go ahead.
1-4, 1-1-6, 1-2-4, 1-2-1-2. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, it is. I will say this, too. I looked at this today. You know, last season was his lowest yardage as a Saint for a season?
Yeah. Passing and touchdowns in? That's because they had, you know, the two-headed running back game. But he also had like the high. I think he had his lowest interception rate of his career.
Yep.
He had like he set the all-time NFL record for completion percentage.
Yep.
So he was much more efficient.
Absolutely.
Only throwing it, you know, 500 times instead of 700.
No. Yeah. Absolutely. No. And I think also too, like you said, the two-headed running back, and just not feeling like he had to win the game, you know, by himself. I felt. Previous seasons, you could see he had this sense on his look on his face, like, okay, I've got to win this game for us, or we're not winning.
Yeah.
But you know, it's. But yeah, I mean, like
yeah,
I said,
I mean, the previous couple of years, and again, you know, not to criticize Brees because you know he's, I think I had him 8 or 9 in my all time quarterback ranking, so you know, obviously I don't think very highly of him, but he was, you know, good for, you know, 15 to 16 interceptions a year.
Yeah.
In the previous couple of years. And then he just, you know, massively cut that down last year.
He had, he had a lot of Favre in him for a while. I mean, he had a lot of, like I said, he would try to make plays that, you know, just weren't there, or he try to fit a, you know, fit a ball in a tight window. And I mean, my wife's heard me complain about Drew Brees in the past, which is, it's funny to say, but it's like, you know, I definitely think, he's a big part. And obviously the fact that we traded a first round pick next year to trade up this year in the draft, to me indicates that they think he's going to be around at least another year after this. Because I don't know why, but so I mean, it's just amazing that he's going to be, you know, almost 40, and or actually he will be 40, I think, next year and playing. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's risky, obviously, at that age. But yeah, well, no, turning, yeah. If you make the playoffs, he'll turn 40 in the playoffs next year.
That's true. So. That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to another one of Akiva's segments here. Actually, let's interrupt. Let's make fun of Akiva. Do you have anything to make fun of Akiva? He's been making fun of me in my absence.
I mean, I would love to help you out, Chester, but I mean, the worst I can say is he's a Jets fan and a Mets fan. I mean, that's pretty much.
Yeah, that's sort of self-imposed.
I do root for, like, when I can, I root for the Jets, and I do root for the Vikings. I did root for the Vikings, I will say, against the Eagles. Maybe that's why you guys lost. You. I don't know. Well, I mean, because I know how, and this call is humble brag, whatever. It's like, I know what it's like to be a fan of a team that is perpetually disappointing.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, the Eagles are that also, you know.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. I mean,
the Eagles are similar to the Vikings in the fact that, you know, unlike a team like the Lions, for example, you know, they're usually competitive. They've made the playoffs a million times. They, you know, they lost four NFC title games in a row, obviously, in the McNabb era. So.
Right.
From that perspective, I would have felt bad for them if not for, obviously, it happened against my team. And also the fact that Philadelphia fans are just so insufferable. Immediately, they turned into, like, Red Sox fans. All right, so let's go to one of the next segments here, Weakest Link.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Okay, so because I've been listening, obviously, to your previous podcast, I've been thinking about this one for a while. I would say... I think Akiva, when he does it, he's asking for a particular player. I'll give you like a position, I guess, on both sides of the ball. For me on offense, it's, I would say, tight end. Like I said, we brought Ben Watson in, but he's 38. You know, our backups are Josh Hill and Michael Homan from the Patriots. He played for the Patriots for a while. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name because I'll ruin it, but
yeah, the guy with the long Hawaiian name, right?
Correct. Yes, correct. Yeah. That
Huma Nanawunu. Yeah, I'm
sure. Yeah. So I think we'll be okay. I'm going back to the offseason. I know they thought about bringing Jimmy Graham back. I would have been okay with that, honestly. But you know, after seeing what the Packers paid him, I'm glad we didn't really get him. I mean, I'd rather have Ben Watson. I think from a receiving standpoint, we'll be fine. I mean, we have Michael Thomas, who's, in my opinion, top five receiver in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And Ted Ginn had a renaissance last year out of nowhere, and then played well for us. But yeah, so on offense, I would say tight end is probably that position. On defense, it's definitely linebacker. I mean, our linebackers played well last year. Te'au, I made fun on the podcast last year. I said, yeah, we signed Manti Te'o and Luke Kuechly's backup, AJ Klein. But you know what? At the end of the day, they played. I thought they played serviceable, and they were better than what we had previously. And I think, but they're definitely still a weakness. I remember I tweeted Akiva right after we signed DeMario Davis. I said, so what can I expect from him? And I don't remember Akiva's answer, but it was basically like not much or something to the effect of like, well, he was on our practice squad, you know, like 5 weeks ago or whatever, beginning of the season. So, but I mean, I think we'll be improved. But yeah, there's definitely a position on defense that gives me trepidation. I would definitely say it's the linebackers, especially if we play a team that has a good tight end, like, you know, like the Packers or. Which we don't play. We wouldn't play them unless it's the playoffs. But
yeah. All right. Let me ask you. So obviously the Saints, you know, made that big trade on draft night to move up to get Marcus Davenport, that edge rusher.
Yep.
Other than him, and again, it was sort of a little bit of a bear draft because of that. But Who's the best, other than him, who's the best rookie?
Tre'Quan Smith. Tre'Quan Smith was our third round pick out of UCF. Almost said UFC. Not quite. UCF. So a couple weeks ago, I think a week ago, we let Brandon Coleman go. He'll probably be back with the team because he had an injury situation, could pass physical. But the reason they felt comfortable letting him go then is because of what Tre'Quan Smith has done in training camp. From what I've seen on tape, just whatever they post on Twitter, it seems like he is going to try and fill what Brandon Cooks would do in the past before we got rid of him. And Breeze has, from what I've heard, Breeze has a lot of faith in him. A lot of confidence.
I mean, if he turns into Brandon Cooks, you're scoring 40 points a game. So,
I'm sorry, say it again.
If he turns into Brandon Cooks, you're scoring 40 points a game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because, I mean, for my money, and you guys talked about this on the Quarterback Ranking podcast about Breeze, about his weapons and, like, where does this group of weapons rank as far as in his time with the Saints. And I got to put it up there. I mean, like you said, we have a two-headed running back monster. You know, we have, like I said, Michael Thomas, top five receiver. I think Michael Thomas is probably the most complete receiver Breeze has had in his time with the Saints. No disrespect to Marcus Colston or Brandon Cooks or any of those guys, but like Michael Thomas to me is you know, can be like an all pro for.
No, I mean, I agree. He was terrifying in the second half of that game. You know, Xavier Rhodes, who's, you know, as good a cornerback as they come, and
right.
You know, he was really
he's part of that. He's part of that Ohio State pipeline that we have going on. Him and Lattimore and Ted Ginn, because Ted Ginn's from Ohio. We didn't draft Ted Ginn, obviously, but and then Kurt Coleman, who we just signed from the Panthers this year at safety. I believe he went to Ohio State too. But yeah, no. Sorry, I got off, and I'm trying to get back to what your question was. Yeah, no. But for best rookie, I would definitely say Tre'Quan Smith. Another reason I say Tre'Quan Smith is the two. So our fourth round pick, Rick Leonard out of Florida State. A lot of people thought he wasn't even going to get drafted because he was a 2-year defensive lineman at Florida State, and then he switched to offensive tackle. So we drafted him basically after playing offensive line for 2 years. He's definitely a project, I'll say. And then the two defensive backs we drafted, Cameron Moore from Boston College and Natrell Jamerson from Wisconsin. I was reading today they may not even make the team because of how deep we are at safety and corner. So, but yeah, definitely if you're asking me to put my money down on somebody that's not Marcus Davenport, which actually even if you include Marcus Davenport, I'm going to say Tre'Quan Smith's going to be the best rookie in this class.
Oh wow. Okay.
So, well, Davenport's not practicing right now. He's injured, so you know it's
okay.
He's got a soft tissue injury. They keep saying so. But now that Okafor got hurt today, so he might. Hopefully, he'll get Davenport gets better soon and can play.
Okay, and then just the last of Keeve's famous segments. How would you convince a football fan from New Zealand to become a Saints fan?
Oh, so this is Sam from New Zealand.
Yeah, or be like the Cowboys guy and say, "Don't become."
Well, actually, no. So this morning, driving to work, I listened to the Cowboy that podcast, and I would. So I'll say this: if Sam was going to become a Saints fan, now is probably the time.
Well, wouldn't the time have been 2006 when you got Drew Brees?
Well, fair enough. But what I'm saying, based on the assumption that he is not a fan yet and he's starting now. You definitely want to do now. I mean, we're definitely exciting to watch. I'll say that. We can be nerve wracking to watch at times. You know, see the Minnesota playoff game, the game we had against the Redskins in the regular season where we were down 15 with 3 minutes left and came back to win. So it's always interesting, I would say, watching the Saints. And I mean, you know, and if you do get to go to a game, it's in New Orleans, or you know the home games are in New Orleans. So, I mean,
I went to a game in New Orleans a couple of years ago. It was the game against Carolina in like week 16 when Carolina was 13 or 14-0, something like that, coming in.
Oh, and we almost beat them. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the first game in NFL history with a 2-point conversion attempt return the other way.
Yep, I remember that game well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that game.
We're going to go through, because it's me and not Akiva here, we're going to go back to the oldies but goodies. We're going to run through the schedule quickly, and then you're going to give us a prediction.
So actually, before you do that, if you don't mind, I actually did it. I pulled a Chester, and I actually went through all 256 games.
Ah, there we go. Well done.
Predicted. So actually, okay. I think I remember the one my loss.
Should we
losses.
Do all 256 on the podcast?
No. Or just the 16? No. I'm fine. No, we're fine, because it's one of those things where like I did it and then I went back and looked and said I had a team 1-15. I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen. Let me go back and see if I can't. Yeah.
Well, that's what I had with the Patriots. I had the Patriots 15-1. So.
Yeah, I had them.
But you know why? Because when you're doing binary win loss, then every game where a team is like a 60% chance to win or lose, you're right. just going to lean those all in that same direction, even though obviously you know they're not going to win all of them. So.
Right, and I found too, I was influenced by the national media. Like, so I get to a game where it's like, well, okay, if San Francisco is really going to be that good, then they should win this game, or if you know if Team A is really going to be this good, then they really need to win this game. Which, yeah, so. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm sorry.
I always go back and redo it sort of, you know, after a couple weeks into the season once we've seen a little bit of each team. But all right, so we're going to talk about the Saints.
Go ahead.
You got a weird schedule. It starts really, really soft. You have an early bye, and then it gets really tough down the stretch, and, you know, you have 11 weeks in a row without a break. So so the soft part, week one, you're at home against Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Bucs.
We will eat that W.
Yeah, and then and then we can you eat it even if Jameis isn't there? I'm not sure how that works. And then week two,
sure.
It gets even easier, probably.
Well,
who knows?
Here's the thing about the Browns. Do you know that Drew Brees' worst yardage against a team is Cleveland?
But isn't that because they're winning by so much they're running the ball in the second half?
No, I mean, the last time we played Cleveland in 2014, we lost.
Oh, wow.
It was at
at home, right? I remember that game.
I want to say it was at Cleveland, but you might be right. Okay. Might have been at home. But anyway, I
remember there was one year when the Saints went like 3-5 at home and lost a bunch of terrible teams.
Yeah, oh yeah, probably. That's what I'm saying. That's being a Saints fan. Like they'll do something. But I will say we beat Cleveland at home, but if Baker Mayfield is playing, I will get nervous. Just because
Tyrod Taylor's getting benched after just one game, you think?
Well, no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying,
yeah.
I'm glad we're playing Cleveland early, because I think as the season goes on, they're going to get better. I guess that's the way I should
say. Okay, week three, you go at Atlanta, your hated rivals.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's a loss. We'll probably end up splitting with them for the season.
All right, and then week four, a late game on CBS at the Giants. This is a national TV game.
So this is one of those games.
Although you've had exciting games against them in the past,
we have. This is one of those games where if the Saints are going to be Super Bowl contenders and all this stuff, they really should win this game. So I'm going to say we win. It's in New York. At least it's early in the year where it's not like. Really cold out. I don't think the wind may not be a factor, but I'll give us a win. I'll give us 3-1 going into the bye.
All right. Well, no. Then you face Washington on Monday night.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. The Washington game on the Monday night, the home game, that's a win. That game is there because they think Brees is going to break the record that night, the passing yards record.
He's going to pass Peyton?
Yeah. He's got to average.
Okay.
That's my understanding why they put that game there.
Okay, because otherwise, that's not exactly a marquee matchup necessarily.
I think he has to average. If he averages right at 300 yards for the first five games, he'll break it that game.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't, Keeve had that whole theory a couple of years ago that ESPN was being punished with bad Monday nighters because of Bill Simmons. I don't know if ESPN's punishment should extend since they fired Bill Simmons. But
all
right, so you come out of the bye, you're 4-1, flying high. You go to Baltimore week 7.
A team that Drew Brees has never beaten.
Never beaten Baltimore.
He's 0-4 in his career.
Oh, wow.
Again, this is a game that we should win because I don't know a lot about Baltimore. I know, obviously, they have a little quarterback controversy with Flacco and Jackson, but their defense is not what it used to be.
I don't know. This is DVOA had them number 6 overall last year. So the advanced stats really love Baltimore. But look at the personnel, and it's a little hard to understand how, maybe it's not about the Jims and Joes. It's about the X's and O's.
You're right. So I will hesitantly give us a W at Baltimore.
All right, 5-1, and then you go to Minnesota, the scene of the crime, Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, that's a loss. I'd like to think we avenge, but I mean, yeah. We got
to
lose.
All right, something. And again, this is where things start to get a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Then you face the Rams the next week. This is a late game. You know, it's at home, but I guess, you know, that'll
so,
be a lot of eyeballs.
So correct me. I don't want to skip ahead, but correct me if I'm wrong. We play at Minnesota, home against the Rams. I forget what the next game is, and then it's home to Philly, correct?
Yeah. So, yeah, the assuming, let's say, that the, you know, those are sort of seen as the four elite teams in the NFC and really in the NFL right. other than New England, you got to face three of them in a four-week span.
Yeah, and I really want to say we win one of those games. So I'll say we beat – I think when I did my predictions, I said we beat Philly.
Okay.
So we'll lose to the Rams. And then who's after the Rams?
Then you face Cincinnati on the road.
See, that's another – oh, God. I know – again, I know Cincinnati's not a world beaters, but, you know, you're coming off two losses. You're going to Cincinnati. It's starting to get – colder outside. Who knows? I'll say we beat Cincinnati and then come back home and beat Philly.
And okay, so you lose two in a row to Minnesota and LA, drop to 5-3, but then you beat the Super Bowl champions. All of a sudden, you're 7-3, and yeah. Now you have a short week and you got a Thursday night game at home against your hated rival, the Falcons.
That's the Thanksgiving night. That's Thanksgiving night. Yeah.
Oh, that's the Thanksgiving late night game. Yeah.
That's the Thanksgiving late night game. First time, to my knowledge, it's the first time the Saints have hosted a Thanksgiving night game. I'll say we win. I said we were going to split earlier, so I say we beat them Thanksgiving night. Right.
So now you're 8-3, and then the next week you're on Thursday again at Dallas, which means the Cowboys are hosting two consecutive Thursday games.
Right.
They got Thanksgiving, obviously, and then the next week.
Yeah,
at Dallas, 8-3.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's a loss. Dallas is one of those teams. They're kind of like a side rival. We don't play them all the time, but Cowboys fans and Saints fans interact enough where there's some
Be honest to me. In like the 80s or whatever, when the Saints were like not particularly good, what percentage of people in the New Orleans area were Cowboys fans versus Saints fans?
I don't know about the New Orleans area per se, but if you go to North Louisiana, like Shreveport,
there's
a substantial, because Shreveport's only 3 hours from Dallas, and it's like 4 hours from New Orleans. So So, I'll say, personally speaking, when I was growing up and the Saints were, you know, terrible and people wearing bags on the head, when the playoffs started, the Cowboys, that's when the Cowboys were good. That's when they were winning three out of four Super Bowls. So I rooted for them, but then once the Saints kind of got better and I went back to rooting for them.
All right, so you're 8-4 after that loss. You go to play Tampa. I don't know if December, I don't know what's going on. Is Jameis back? Is he still have the job? Does Dirk Cutter has still have a job? Is Tampa, are they competing? Or are they bottoming out? Who knows?
Yeah, I say we sweep Tampa. We'll eat that W too.
So 9-4, and 9-4, it's, you know, the week before Christmas. You still haven't faced the Carolina Panthers yet.
That's correct.
So you got to face them twice in the last 3 weeks. The first one is Monday night on the road.
And I'll say we split them. We'll lose the Monday night on the road.
So you're 9-5. And then you face Pittsburgh in week 16. That's another – I mean, this schedule is really brutal the second half.
It really is. I'll just to cut to the chase, I'll say we win the last two at home against Pittsburgh.
Okay, so you beat Pittsburgh and Carolina. You repeat the 11-5 season.
Now,
between Atlanta and Carolina, is that enough? Are you winning the division or are you making a wild card?
So when I did the 256 games, I had Atlanta going 11-5 as well. We talked about it earlier. The floor for this team under Peyton is 7-9, right? So if something just goes, even if something goes really wrong, we'll be 7-9. Now, obviously, 7-9 is not going to get you into playoffs. But I think because if we repeat kind of the performance of last year, stick to a running game, defense plays. Look, and as good as the defense was last year, Chester, it still was only like 15th in the league. Like, it was, you know, it was league average. Like, it wasn't like we were setting the world on fire on defense, but that's all we need. They only gave up 20 points a game. If our defense only gives up 20 points a game, we're pretty much in every game. If you're going to tell me Drew Brees has to score 20 points, I like our chances. So 11-5 to me is the ceiling. Floor for us, 8-8, 9-7. We just missed the playoffs, but I think this team is definitely hungry to get another, get one more run, especially after the way the Minnesota game ended. So,
all right, well, maybe we'll meet. Maybe we'll meet twice this season. Who knows?
Yeah. Look, hey, maybe it'll be in New Orleans this time, and we can
I do not want to go back there again after the way things worked out last time.
By the way, you were talking about that game, the 09 game. That was the most emotionally draining football game I've ever watched in my life.
I know. Trust me.
Yeah. Reggie Bush.
I got kicked out. I was watching. Yeah, so I had gotten married. I dated my wife for 5 years, so she knew who I was. But I had gotten married that June. So, living in my apartment with my wife for the first time, and this is 6 months later, I was so emotional, and, it was not like the Vikings Saints first half this year in the playoffs. It was not.
Right.
I was so the first half. The Vikings were running up and down the field and just fumbling over and over and over, and I was such a mess that our neighbors asked my wife if I could leave and watch the second half somewhere else because I was, making too much noise. And so I went over to my friend's house for the second half, and – oh man, it was a draining, not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I mean it, and the thing for me, because like I said, the Saints had been so bad for so long, and it's like, look, you don't get these chances this often. So it's like, if we don't win this game, like when Hartley kicked the field goal and sent us to the Super Bowl, I just passed out. Like I just fell on the ground. Just I was just exhausted. I was like this is. And then I was actually watching the game with my now wife. We weren't married at the time. We had just started dating, and kind of a similar thing. It's like she looks at me and goes, "You have to wait 2 weeks for the Super Bowl. Like, are you going to be okay? Are you going to be able to?" And I said, "Yeah." And luckily enough, worked out for us. So
yeah.
But
all right. So thanks for joining us, Paul. You're on Twitter at PaulElliott_316, and then of course you also have Seinfeld Madness is your where you do the polls of the different episodes.
Yeah, well, not so much anymore, but yeah, that's what I did before.
All right, yeah, but if you're a Seinfeld fan, you should follow Seinfeld Madness as well. Look, I'm not going to wish you good luck because
fair enough.
I still hate the Saints because of 2009, and we're facing you at least once this year, and the NFC is too good. I need some of these good teams to backslide out.
I was surprised to get the email from Kiev saying, "Hey, we'll have you back." Because I was like, "Oh, I didn't know." Well, I figured since what happened last year, you would want to talk to me at this point, but.
Yeah.
But yeah. But no, thanks again for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, most of my issues with the Saints were tied to the Greg Williams era. Like Sean Payton was, trolling the Vikings fans at the end of the game before, with the skull thing. I have no problem with that. That's
good-natured ribbing,
I'm glad that we shoved it in his face, obviously, but,
Fair enough, yeah. Well, that's Sean, and that's Sean Payton. That's just the way
he is. I have no problem with it. The only Saint I really hated was Greg Williams, so, and he's long gone.
Fair enough.
All right, Paul, thanks very much, and, bad luck to your team this year.
Sure, same to you.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Bye. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I'd have said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but it must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. My head is in a bad place. Up in my mind, just got to give myself a good talking to this time. Just need a little brain salad surgery. Got to cue my insecurity. I've been in the wrong place, but it must have been the right time. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong song. The right thing, but it must be the wrong.